And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials on this Saturday morning. There is
you haven't heard this program before. It's
oh, I've heard that one before. Anyway, back to the program. See, I'm just so super-duper prepared all the time. I'm just ready to go. You give me a topic, and I want to discuss it to death. You know, I think I've discovered that I may not be exactly the fastest learner in the world when I read something. I kind of catch myself going, that was interesting. I'm going to read that again, but this time I'll read it more slowly. And then if I find a crayon laying around, I'll take a crayon and I'll make a mark or two to kind of help brighten the page. And I tell you what, I think I learn better when I use crayons. Crayons kind of give words color. I did not say it changed the meaning of the word, but it gives it color. Anyway, I want to share this with you just briefly. I've had many questions about this topic, and you know that the human body is basically made of only four elements. Let me think, what are they? It's going to be hydrogen, carbon, oxygen and nitrogen. That's it. That is it. Probably easily 95%+ of a human being is made of those four elements. We are made of hydrogen. We're made of oxygen, carbon, and nitrogen. I do not believe that you find each one of those elements in great abundance in junk food. Do you find them in living food that grows in the forests? Yeah. I was walking down by the creek and I saw a mushroom, and the mushroom looked very interesting. It had a very long stem. The cap was very small. I would almost describe the color as kind of a brownish, taupe gray, if I could throw those three colors out. And I thought to myself, well, this looks harmless enough. Sometimes I go to half-price books and I look at the manuals on plants. And yes, there are some plants that are quite toxic. And to the best of my knowledge, the toxic mushrooms, it's almost like they have a small furry band around the middle part of the stem, and they have some pretty weird-looking colors. If you're in the forest and you see a bloody red white-spotted mushroom with a furry band around the stem, do not eat it. Now, if you pick it and hand it to your husband, well, then you're diabolical. You're trying to, anyway. But I put it in my mouth, and there was no unpleasant taste to it. It was very interesting. And then I wanted to see if it made me feel unusual afterwards. It did not. And I can kind of imagine to myself, some of these mushrooms that I spot and see, obviously, animals in the forest, they want to eat them. Somebody's trying to call, so we'll go ahead and take this phone call. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hey, Dr. Morgan, I was got a question about taking black seed oil.
Are you Egyptian?
No, sir, I'm not an Egyptian, but I take blood pressure medicine, high blood pressure medicine.
Well, who do you think you are taking black seed oil just because the Egyptians have been using this for 3,000 years before even Ayurvedic medicine or Chinese medicine successfully? I'm just joking.
I heard it's good stuff. I don't know much about it.
Well, you know, let's just leave it at this, or start with this. God has designed all these very diverse, unique plants, and some plants, they give off oils. If you read in the Bible, there's probably not a chapter or two that goes by that you don't hear the mention of the use of olives or olive oil, right?
Right.
Or it's frequently. The black seed oil has a very unique chemical composition and makeup that may actually have health-promoting properties. But is that what you're wanting to do for you to help assist you with your blood pressure?
Yes, sir.
You got nothing to lose by trying it.
Okay.
You know what I think are the worst oils of all time? Here's the way I want to phrase it. If you want to cause high blood pressure, then you should eat foods that are fried in vegetable oil, like canola oil, safflower oil, corn oil. That is just a joke. If I walk in the grocery store and I walk down the aisle that sells vegetable oil, and They have the audacity to put a red heart saying it's heart healthy on corn oil. Nothing could be further from the truth. Do you think Mazola is going to do like a long-term study on people that consume it? No. If I'm not mistaken, there was a study called the Lion Study or Lyon Study from France, and they tried giving men that had had heart attacks or previous heart attacks corn oil. Are you kidding, buddy? They were dropping like flies. The people that consumed olive oil, oh no, they lived.
What about grapeseed oil?
Can I say that I'm, if I had said on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 would be the lowest confidence that I would have that would help produce health, and 10 would be the highest confidence, I would say it's probably about a 2 or 3 on my list.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, it's just my interpretation. Now, I'm just like you are. Grape or a grapevine is got to be one of the most gorgeous plants of all time. If you put that in the ground near a fence where it a trellis, someplace it has to grab onto, I just think a grape is gorgeous. Of course, I feel the same way about raspberries and blackberries and blueberries. It's just like it's kind of like a rugged beauty, and it produces this plant that gives life. So grapes have been consumed forever, but grape seeds, I think that they're good. Let me start over here. Every plant that you and I could look at that grows on the earth, it probably has some degree of toxicity in very, very high amounts. But at moderate to low amounts, it has tremendous health-promoting properties. But I know grapeseed is probably much better for you than corn or canola or soybean oil. But how are you talking about using it?
I was going to just to fry with it. They said it takes a lot of heat.
What are you going to fry?
Eggs, you know. I like eggs, scrambled eggs. I use that for oil.
Would you believe me if I told you that butter is much more heat stable than grapeseed oil?
Okay. No, I wouldn't believe it.
Well, butter might actually be better for you for frying eggs. And, of course, what you're trying to do is you're not trying to use a temperature at 2,000 degrees. What is the surface of the sun? 20,000 degrees? I really don't even know. How close could you and I get to the sun before we burned up?
I'm not very close.
If NASA decided to produce a rocket ship to the planet Mercury, would you volunteer to go onto that ship so you could walk on the surface? Probably not, right?
Right.
I think butter is a much, much better choice. And I would probably say, as far as that goes, if you used a good source of coconut oil. You know, when you walk down the store aisle and you look at coconut oil, the stuff almost looks like lard, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I have that also, but it just doesn't. It looks like it doesn't take a lot of heat.
Why do you say that?
Well, I mean, it dries up fast.
Dries up?
Yeah, when I put the eggs in and I mix it up, you know.
Are you saying like the eggs soak it up and then the skillet's a little bit dry? Okay, right. I know where you're coming from now. Well, what I would request, if you and I looked at the temperature levels of what oils can tolerate, I think if you put it to the test, you'd find out that something like beef tallow or lard, it's much more tolerable, and butter is more tolerable to heat, and the coconut oil is probably much more tolerable of heat also. And when you look at other oils, the problem is if you use canola oil or safflower, and grapeseed, yes. I'm just going to say that's probably like a middle-of-the-range type oil. And you could use it for your eggs, but I'm trying to think of, you know what? Here's what you've done for me today. You've asked me a question I don't know the total answer to. But if you'll let me do just a little bit of study and research, and I'm going to see what I can come up with on grapeseed oil. And I'll try to answer that question next week in a little bit better detail. I just think right now that butter is a better choice. So,
okay, suppose I got a wok and I use I'm doing some vegetables in there and I use grapeseed oil. I mean, I thought that was going to be a better choice because, like I said, it takes a lot of heat.
Well, here's what I started to say a while ago. I think that you and I would agree that the least amount of heat that we have to use for the desired cooking effect of the food is the best, right?
Okay.
We're not trying to turn the skillet up or the wok up to 20,000 degrees Fahrenheit and melt the metal in front of us. I was watching that documentary on YouTube about the Russians drilling the deepest hole into the crust of the earth, or into the earth that's ever been dug. I think when they got to 7.5 miles under the earth, they said the temperature is like 350 degrees Fahrenheit, and for some reason they felt like they could not drill any deeper because that temperature would probably negatively affect the drilling apparatus. I don't really know. I'm not the scientist. But if you can get the job done at 200 degrees, that would be far better on preserving the nutritional density and the quality of the living food than if you cooked it at 500 degrees, right?
Right.
Okay, so you're just trying to use the lowest amount of heat necessary. And I'm going to do a study on grapeseed oil, and I'll get back with you on that. Sorry I didn't have that information memorized for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your phone call. Bye. If you do not like this topic, there is one man that you can blame. His name is Jimmy. And I'm kind of agreeable to blaming him, because it's his fault that when I read this information, it is just turning my world upside down. So I'm blaming him with a thankful heart. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, Dr. Morgan, I was, we don't hardly ever, well, we haven't had a TV in 10 years. We just watch Christian DVDs and stuff, but we were in a...
How do you remain positive by doing that?
Oh, listen to Christian radio.
Are you sure that's all you need to be positive?
Yes, sir. But okay. Anyway, we were watching the Fox News. We were in a restaurant, and this guy was doing a commercial on a skillet that's made with ceramic and steel. And we were wondering if he knew anything about that.
I know they must have some technique for bonding the ceramic to the skillet itself. I just don't know what that technique is. But if I go backwards, you know what a Teflon cookware is, don't you?
Oh, I know. I wouldn't use it for nothing.
And so you can say it's just got a huge amount of fluoride and plastic in it, and of course that's flame retardant, but at the expense of poisoning your body. And of course, I think you've heard me say this before, that the highest correlation to women that have thyroid disease is the use of nonstick cookware. It's just incredible. I know that's not what you're calling for, but I thought I'd throw that in there. But the use of ceramic. Do you know that they could actually take ceramic and they can make a knife blade out of it?
Yes, sir.
You could walk down the aisle of any large store that sells cookware, and you can look over there and say, hey, there's a cheap metal knife for $3. I could use that to chop my onions with. And then you look over there, and there's one for like $12, and it says it's made of ceramic. Isn't that basically pottery?
Yeah, I just wondered if it would be safe.
Well, the only thing I thought of is, what is the bonding agent and what's the process? And so what I'm thinking of is, I just want to make sure something is not leaking or leaching out any toxic metabolites. But do you know what the metal is they use to apply the ceramic to?
No, sir.
Is it cast iron?
No, I think it was like tungsten steel. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, tungsten steel and cast iron are probably like, there's going to be a similarity. But the point I'm getting to is, I despise aluminum cookware.
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, boy, I just don't think that's a good call. I know it's just one small detail, but there's not many things that makes your blood very dirty and thick like aluminum cookware does. And so, all right, this is great. Somebody else has asked me a question I don't know the answer to. That means I'm going to have to study the topic.
Yeah, we want you to study it out if you can, but we use Salad Master. We've had it for 36 years.
What is Salad Master?
Stainless steel.
Okay.
And it's lifetime warranty. We've been using it for 36 years.
Now, had to contact the company about the warranty yet?
No, sir.
Okay.
Now, we did use that old Teflon for a while until we heard how bad it was.
Well, but you know what? The thing I like about you is, once you find out some new information, you act upon it very quickly.
Yes, sir.
Would you believe me if I told you that if this is the latest study that came out, and I'm just floored by it,
if a physician goes to a seminar, and I'm going to give you just an example. If he goes to a seminar and there is an expert speaker that is an expert on the use of a fat-soluble vitamin called vitamin D3, and in the study, the doctor says, if your patient's blood levels of vitamin D3 are right at 52, did you know that you could cut the risk of breast cancer in half? And if he says, if your vitamin D3 levels are 34 or below, then there's no way that you can rebuild the bones with while you're lacking vitamin D. And so the seminar speaker and his expertise, or her expertise, is just trying to convince all the physicians in the audience that there is a certain level of vitamin D that is optimal, and your body functions better when it has it. Here's my punchline. The latest study shows it takes 16 years for the average physician to incorporate that information from going to the seminar and learning it until they can transmit that information to their clients or their patients. That is just shocking. Did it take you 15 years after you heard about Teflon to get rid of it?
No, sir. We threw it in the trash the same day.
Well, what I want to say at this point is ceramic, which is what would you call ceramic? Just in layman's terms, would you just say it's a thin layer of pottery or glass?
Yes, sir.
But that stuff is so incredibly hard; it's unreal. How could you make a knife blade unless it was just very, very strong?
Yeah, it's something else.
Do you remember back in the 70s when they had those 1 liter Coke bottles?
Yes, sir.
When they would serve a Coca-Cola, you'd get them from those like ice-cold cases on the floor, and you would lift a lid and you reach down there and grab a Coke. But if you dropped one of those empty Coke bottles on the concrete, that sucker would shatter. But there would usually be these very large, curved shards of glass, you know, from the very thick end of the Coke bottle.
Yes, sir.
Well, I remember my dad, he would take and he would use that to shave down a hammer or an oak or a hickory handle. What are hammer handles made out of, or hoe handles? Is that hickory?
Most of them, yes, sir.
I mean, the better, I know that you've used a really cheap wood. I mean, that hoe is, or the shovel is going to wear out real quick, isn't it, with use?
Yes,
but
sir.
If it was hickory, oh my goodness, those things could last a long time. But the Coke bottle was like my dad's knife that he would use to trim or shave the wood with. I just thought that was interesting.
Yes, sir, it is.
Well, I'm going to find out about the ceramic, and I'll get back with you on that, okay?
Yeah, it's on a TV commercial. You can probably get it off the internet, which we don't have either.
Man, how do y'all survive without all the positive things that are flowing from the television?
Well, we try to do the Christian radio, the news on the Christian radio, and we also trust in the Lord.
Oh, how could you? You know what? A woman came to my office, and she said, "Could you believe all the horrible things that are going on in the world?" And I thought to myself, I have no idea what's going on because I don't watch TV.
That's right.
No, I'm proud of you. Thank you for calling. I just want to find out what's the process they use that bonds a ceramic. And the other thought that I have is I wonder how thick or how thin ceramic needs to be to coat it thoroughly, and I want to make sure that none of the metals transmit or pass through it like with the Teflon and the aluminum.
Well, if they've actually done something that's good, this would be really good. I would even buy
it.
Yes.
If they've done something that's good, like you're saying, we should praise them for it and promote the product, right?
Yes, sir, because I watched this guy. You would not believe the heat stuff he put it through, and it would just fall right out of it.
Yeah, but you would not use that level of heat if you were cooking food, would you?
No, you wouldn't have to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, your goal in sautéing onions is just to gently sauté them and cook them where they're tolerable, right?
With butter, yes, sir.
Yeah, but you're not trying to it's not supposed to be a nuclear holocaust in the kitchen where you destroy everything in sight.
No.
I guess that's the point I was trying to make with the last caller is there is just a certain level of heat. I mean, you just want to get the job done, but you don't want to, like, destroy everything in it, right?
Well, you could basically put it on the same level as cooking frying a medium egg.
Yeah.
It don't take that much heat.
Well, I mean, I think I've read studies before where you cook an egg slower at a lower heat,
you do preserve many, many more nutrients and vitamins and elements that are good for you than if you tried to, you know, nuke it at high temperature.
Yeah, we put ours like on, we got an electric top stove, and we put ours on like one-third, you know, of the heat.
Wait a second, are you talking about your microwave?
No, sir.
That was a setup question. I'm just joking.
But I did, a couple of years ago, I did an experiment, believe this or not, with aluminum and a reflector, and I took a cast iron skillet, and I put a little butter in it, and I fried an egg out there, and it didn't take but probably an hour.
You mean with the cast iron or the aluminum?
With the cast iron and the aluminum as a reflector to throw the heat on the cast iron skillet.
Oh, I got you. So you just tried to cook an egg out in the sunshine?
I did, yes, sir.
That sounds like something John the Baptist would do. He would find some duck eggs and crack them over a rock.
Yeah.
In the desert or the wilderness.
It'll work.
It will work. Thank you very much for your phone call.
Yeah, I took up enough of your time. Lord bless you.
Okay, Lord bless you. Bye-bye. I haven't even given out the phone number, and I apologize for that. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257 if you want to call and ask a question. Please forgive me for not doing that. So it's 903-586-5257. All right. I mean, sometimes when you read information, it's just so enthralling and intriguing, and it just kind of turns your world upside down. It makes you rethink, you know, a situation. But I want to share this with you right here. There was I want to read the comments of a man by the name of Warren Angus Ferris. And with a name like Warren Angus Ferris, I have to read what he says. I mean, he sounds like a real man's man. Anyway, he wrote in a book called Life in the Rocky Mountains. Ferris was a trapper, or cartographer. I'm not sure what that is. I don't know if that means that he drew, you know, images of what he saw when he was up in the near the Snake River. Anyway, and he was a diarist, which means I think he tried to write his observations and thoughts in a diary form. Back in the year in 1829 to 1835, which is like a six-year span, he traveled to the Cache Valley and the Snake River area with the American Fur Company. During that trip, he noted that they stopped along the Bear River. After a very fatiguing and toilsome march of 30 miles, and he wrote, they killed many buffalo and then feasted luxuriously on the delicate tongues, the rich humps, the fat roast, and the savory steaks of this noble and excellent species of game. And he goes on to write, bison in poor flesh were the worst diet imaginable. But as they became fat, I think what he's saying is when he found bison that were very, very lean, he said that was the worst thing that you could eat. But when they became very fat, oh, that's a different story. And he goes on to write, when they would eat bison that were very, very fat, this is what he says, and I love this. He says, we grew strong and hardy, and now not one of us but is ready to insist that no other kind of meat can compare with that of the female bison in good condition. You notice how he said female versus male, didn't you? And he goes on to write, with it we require no seasoning. We boil, roast, or fry it as we please. And we live upon it solely without bread or vegetable of any kind. And what seems most singular, we never tire of it or disrelish it, which would be the case with almost any other meat after living upon it exclusively for a few days. If you want to join me on the radio, sorry, I almost pushed the button just in time. I did not. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you haven't heard this program before, it's called Health Essentials. Yes, that is my recommendation to you today. Look for a very fat, plump female bison
and you feast to your heart's content, because you need to have strength to live in this world. I think sometimes a man or woman should not be measured by how many times they are knocked down to the ground, but how many times they get back up. Doesn't it say something like that in Ecclesiastes? If you would like to ask a question, you can call now and I will push the button and get you right on the air with me. 903-586-5257. You know what the contrast is from this trapper's review of the female buffalo? Well, let's just say you get a chicken breast that has been, let's just say it's basically a mini Frankenstein. It has no flavor. Good morning, and thank you for your phone call.
Yes, Dr. Morgan. I have a question. I've had type A flu. I have taken the Tamiflu antibiotic inhaler, but I can't get rid of the cough, and my ears are stopped up.
Well, that is not a good deal.
No, and it's been like this since the end of January.
So are we going on 2 or 3 weeks now?
Yes.
Which one's more annoying, the ears or the cough?
Well, they're both very annoying.
Okay.
The cough I've had the longest. I didn't get the ears stopped up until, I guess after I got, through the Tamiflu.
Do you feel like that your ears just aren't draining properly and all that gunk is just staying in there?
Well, I've gone to the doctor, and she says there's a little bit of fluid, but they're just extremely swollen. She says she can see the blood vessels, and she said the eardrum is barely, moving. She gave me a B12 shot on Monday.
Wait a second. What did you say? She gave you a vitamin?
Yes, on Monday.
Did you notice any improvement in how you felt after the injection?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
She said my immune system was probably low, and I'm on steroids right now.
So, okay, I'm not trying to make a joke by saying this. So on one hand, she gives you B12, and you get a boost in how you feel, which is good. That's very encouraging. But then she gives you a drug that totally suppresses your immune system. Can you play it both ways? Anyway, let me just – I was reading an article the other day about kids that had ear infections, and they were saying that at the end of 1 month – and this is just one particular study, but it was very interesting to me. At the end of 1 month, the physician or the nurse could examine the ears, and they could still see some fluid in the ear. Sometimes they call it ear glue. Maybe it's clear, like Elmer's. and they said there was one-third, even after the infection was gone and the infection was over with, one-third of the kids still had this glue in their ear at the end of a month. At the end of 2 months, I think they said it was down to about like 19%, something like that. At the end of 3 months, 10% of all the kids, even though they were over the infection, they still had this gunk. So I don't think this is rocket science, but some people discharge waste from the ears better than others. So can I give you some ideas?
Yes.
Which I know that's a rhetorical question, sorry. If you were go, tell me, where do you live?
I live in Frisco.
Frisco, okay. Well, if you're in Frisco, you probably have access to places like Whole Foods and Central Market and health food stores, right?
Correct.
Man, this is like an exotic radio program. You're calling from like halfway across the state of Texas, right?
I wouldn't say halfway.
I know, maybe 100 miles. Sorry, I kind of exaggerated. If you go in there, there's usually a section in Whole Foods or the health food store where they have children's products. But there is a product that I like very, very much. It's called ear oil.
Okay.
And ear oil usually has several components. One is called garlic. Another herb is called mullein. And then they have one called hypericum. And a lot of times at the oil base, it can be olive oil or another type of good, healthy oil. But if you were to put a few drops of this ear oil in your ears, just kind of lay on your side, take advantage of gravity. You do not have any hole in your eardrums, do you, or your tympanic membrane?
No, I don't.
But if you start laying on your side and take advantage of gravity and just put a few drops of ear oil, do this several times a day, And let's see if all that gunk starts draining from your ears. And I know this is kind of gross for me to say, but if you get a chunk of debris in the back of your throat, please spit that stuff out. Do not swallow a big chunk of gunk that comes out of your ears through the eustachian tube or if something drains. But if you'll do that, we'll see if this starts to cleanse and clean all that gunk out of your ear. That's very easy to do, and I can't imagine a bottle of ear oil costing more than $6. Wait a second, since you're in Frisco, it's going to be $12.99.
Probably.
That's just a joke, anyway. Do you actually live in the city limits of Frisco?
Yes, I do.
Do you ever go to that store called IKEA?
No, I try not to go there.
it's like a maze. You can never get out of the store.
That's right.
If you get in there, you're like a rat, and you're going, oh, if I could only work my way out of this maze, I could get out of here. No, I'm just joking. Yeah.
What about the cough? My cough is, everybody at work is telling me to hush.
they love you. They just want you to get some resolution. I'm sure that's what their comments are all about. They're not saying, are you trying to call geese that are flying overhead right now from 5,000 feet? Anyway.
No.
There's two or three things that I want you to try.
Okay.
If you happen to have a tea kettle or a steam kettle, you know, the kind that has that little bitty whistling flap on the front of it and where you know it's hot enough. But what I want you to do is, those aren't expensive. I mean, you can get one at Walmart for like $9.88. But if you get a stainless steel tea kettle, add water to it. But I want you to put one spoonful of an herb or a cooking spice called thyme or thyme, however you want to say it.
Okay.
And then in your case, I think I would probably put maybe two or three drops of what are called oil of oregano.
Okay.
And then there's a exotic oil that comes from Australia called tea tree oil.
Okay.
I just said the word exotic because I think I thought to myself that would make it sound more, you know, special anyway. But if you'll put about two or three drops of tea tree oil, what I want you to do is get a towel and just stand maybe, 20 inches away from it. We're not trying to burn your face with the steam. I'm sure your face is quite stunning and beautiful. We don't need to make it red with blisters because we've like steam cleaned it. But if you get that far away, what you can do is for about 10 minutes twice today or three times today, I just want you to breathe that steam medicinal solution deep through your nose into your lungs. And we're going to start steam cleaning your lungs. And I'm telling you, I am convinced that you will see some stuff come out of you. If I were there, I would cut my hand and whack you very, very firmly in the back, all up and down your lung fields. Lovingly, of course, not in a violent manner, because I would try to drive the evil spirits, I would try to drive the congested infection deep from your lungs and say, out from her, leave her.
I wish you were here then. That would be
well,
nice.
Is there anybody else that can whack you in the back?
Oh, I think I can find somebody.
Well, make sure it's always applied in love. That's the key point here.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll try those two things. Hopefully I'll get some relief because, 3 weeks has been a long time.
I know, something's got to give. But steam will dissolve all that hard, gunky mucus in your sinuses and in your lungs.
Okay.
It'll come up out of you.
Okay. Well,
it's either that or I have to send you down to the health club and trick you into going into a sauna for about 1 hour.
Okay. Well, I could do that.
Well, if you could do that. I mean, I don't know that I would sit right beside a very hairy older gentleman that wanted to strike up a conversation. I wouldn't be interested in that.
Me either.
Okay. That makes two of us. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your phone call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to join me on the radio, 903-586-5257. And you know what? Here's what I wish that I had told her. They have done studies just with the use of ozone. And you can get an ozone machine very inexpensively off eBay. But ozone has been shown to kill almost all these germs, very sterilizing. Kind of a cool deal. I tried and tried to push the button. It just wouldn't push easy, but I just got it.
Hello, you have reached KBJS 90.
I'm sorry. I kept trying to push the button. It wouldn't do it. I'll do it again. please forgive me. Call back 903-586-5257, and I'll be happy to take your phone call. Do you know what ozone is? When a thunderstorm... Actually, let me paint a picture for you. All your neighbors are burning leaves and trash. It is a hot day. You're going, great. It's a beautiful day outside. It's warm. I wanted to go outside and do some yard work, but my neighbors are burning all this trash. And it stinks. And I can't even enjoy myself because of the smoke. But all of a sudden, the Lord sends a thunderstorm over, and it washes all that toxic smoke away. That's ozone. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi, this is KBJS 90.3.
I have no idea what I'm doing wrong here. Try one more time again. I don't know if it's... I'll try to listen more closely. 586-5257. You don't know this, but there's a phone bank to my right. And usually I can see line number one light up in green. But it wasn't lighting up, so... You can try it again. But I've already had like two callers come in this morning, so I know it works. Sometimes I can hear it, sometimes I can't. But if you'll try again, I'll get you right in. 903-586-5257. Okay. What's the next thing I was going to share with you? Okay. This says, okay, I heard that. Did it work now?
Yes, it did.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I just have a quick question. My toes seem to get numb at night when I'm laying in bed or towards night, and I just wondered what that could be, and I'll get off the phone so other people can ask
okay.
you things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, I want to make a comment to start off with. That is very, very rude of your toes to treat you that way since you have numbness. Well, obviously, we're probably not getting exactly the delivery of oxygen to your toes that you would like to have. One thing that you can do to try to test the situation is you can take a thermometer. If you happen to have a thermometer that's filled with mercury, I like them. They're old-fashioned. They seem to be very accurate. Sometimes they're a lot more accurate than the modern electronic ones, but that's just me talking. They're just kind of slow and laborious. If I go to a garage sale in just a little bit and they have mercury fill thermometers for $1 each, I'm buying them. Because I like to play with mercury. I'm joking about that. Mercury is toxic. Absolutely one of the most toxic substances neurologically that your body can come in contact with. Don't do it. That was a bad joke on my part. But if you were to check your morning temperature before you arise from bed in the morning, just shake the thermometer down, make sure it's very clean. That's what soapy water and, hot soapy water and alcohol will do. It'll sterilize it. Once it's dry, you can place it under your tongue or in your mouth, and let's just see what your temperature is. If your temperature is 98.6 degrees, then we really don't have much to talk about with that topic. But what we want is, we want heat. Heat is the energy that your body manufactures, and you've got to have it to live. And so, like anything else, there is a normal operating temperature that is considered optimal and ideal for the human being. And 98.6 is a little bit closer. Now, I know there are probably at least three women and two men listening right now. They're going to say, that's not normal for me. My normal is 95.8. Well, I hear you, but that is not optimal. Your immune system, your brain, your circulation, your blood, they function so, so much better at 98.6 degrees. And so if your feet are getting numb at night, why don't you just check your morning temperature? And if you're a degree low, then there's room for improvement. We can work on that. One of the ways of trying to correct that is, I know, I sound like a broken record. If you purchased a far infrared portable sauna, that would give infrared heat. It's just mimicking what comes from the sun. But I have seen many circulatory problems improve just with the use of a sauna. And plus, the toxins will come rolling out of you, totally rolling out of you, in the form of a round bead of sweat off your forehead. If you hold your tongue out as it comes off the end of your nose, it will taste quite salty and maybe even toxic. That should be a clue to you. The other thing that I would have you do is just wear wool socks to bed at night. Try that night after night. I've just started a new company. It's called Roy's Deep Sleep Socks. They're made of wool. You put them on at night, and that will greatly help you. So do that, and let me know what happens. There is a book that a gentleman gave to me, and I tell you what, I agree with him. Anything that kind of shakes you up from your belief system, let's just put it this way. When it comes to health care in America, you had better not think that every time you go to a doctor that they are delivering the gospel to you. No, it is not the gospel. See, I would say the gospel is set in stone. But when somebody says this is your only option to have 37 rounds of radiation, are there any other treatments, doctor? No, this is all you can do. Should I work on my diet? Absolutely do not work on your diet. That's ridiculous. Can I take an herbal supplement? No, don't do that. It's only radiation, baby. That is not the gospel. But I like books that kind of shake you around a little bit, and you think you know, but you really don't. Very humbling, but it's good to be humbled. Sometimes from tremendous difficulties and adversities, you can rise from the ashes. And, what does it say? Humble yourself under God's mighty hand, and He will lift you up. But what I want to do is I want to read just a small amount of information. And from Fred, I butchered it. His name is Fred. Fred Provenza. He's written a book called Nourishment. It says, What Animals Can Teach Us About Rediscovering Our Nutritional Wisdom. Let me read this to you. And I'm going to see if you can extract some pearl of wisdom from this. Just tell me what you think. Okay. During the summer, seeds we plant in spring, they transform from packets of potential into seedlings, juveniles, and then mature plants that create more packets of potential. Upon ripening, seeds are disguised. Some inside plump, red tomatoes and other hidden underneath shucks. Still others inside cantaloupes, watermelons, zucchinis, and pumpkins. Their colors can change from tans and browns of seeds to pale green seedlings, to deep green mature plants, to reds, yellows, oranges of their progeny. Where do plants get their spectacular colors? Why do they have colors at all? The answer to these questions lies in now a familiar theme. Secondary compounds, along with the many other roles they play in the lives of plants, are the source of their beautiful colors. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to tell you about one of those colors, or one of those pigments. It's called chlorophyll. Chlorophyll. I listened to a woman yesterday describe to me about her healing. And as she described her healing, she mentioned the word chlorophyll. Well, don't you think that my ears kind of perked up? I said, interesting. Did you know that chlorophyll is the most abundant pigment in the world? It paints the earth green in spring and summer. Chlorophyll is essential for photosynthesis. That's the process whereby plants convert photons, the small packets of energy that make up light, into chemical bonds of sugar molecules plants use for energy. Chlorophyll absorbs specific colors or wavelengths of light, and it helps to convert them into chemical energy. Photons from different colors of light contain different amounts of energy. The colors in the spectrum, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, Wait a second. That says Roy. That's Roy G. Bev. That's me. Are all in ascending order of energy. I did not know that. There's red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. Going from the greatest energy to the least. A photon of red light has less energy than a photon of violet light. I got that backwards, sorry. Chlorophyll absorbs violet, indigo, blue, orange, and red light. And most yellow. But hardly any green light. So green light gets reflected back to our eyes, which is why the leaves look green. I find that just fascinating. The chemical structure of chlorophyll closely resembles hemoglobin. That is an essential protein located in your red blood cells or in the blood. Chlorophyll is known for its ability to help increase production of red blood cells, thus preventing anemia, and for blood clotting and wound healing. There's your third golden package right there. Chlorophyll is loaded with antioxidants that exert beneficial effects throughout the body, including reducing the risk of cancer by inducing apoptosis, the death of the cells that occurs as a normal and controlled part of an organism's growth or development. Chlorophyll strengthens the immune system. It helps heal inflammatory disorders such as arthritis and fibromyalgia, and it has anti-aging properties. Unlike chlorophyll, other pigments in leaves and flowers absorb light of different colors so they can reflect as either red or orange or yellow or blue or purple light. The pigments in the showy flowers that attract birds, bees, and other insects fall into three classes. There's the flavonoids, sometimes those are called the proanthocyanidins. They make the deep red colors and the blues and the purples and the magentas. I'm kind of thinking that would be resveratrol that's found in red wine, or the compounds that would be found in blueberries. If you want to extend life, you might be wise to consider those. Carotenoids, which are called carotene and lycopene, and other flavonoids like flavones and flavanols, they create the reds and the oranges and the yellows of flowers and fruits. The betalains make colors akin to flavonoids and carotenoids. Deep and varied colors from purples, blues, and greens, and reds, and oranges, and yellows are an indication of the phytochemical richness in the vegetable and the fruit that promote health in humans. What's my point there? If your diet is based on white, boneless, skinless chicken breast that's raised on antibiotics and steroids and chemicals to make these chickens grow fast, I don't know that they have a lot in there that's going to promote healing of an inflammatory condition like heart disease or diabetes or Alzheimer's, fibromyalgia. So just consider, anytime you want to improve your health, why don't you start consuming the very things that God has designed into them? So, chlorophyll, you're getting it when you eat something green. I would be amiss if I did not suggest that you can heal the body with God's creation. He's given us everything that we need. But sometimes we're so smart, we don't think of that. We think of a completely packaged food that's void of any nutrients. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a question about kidney problems. What is it that you can do naturally to improve kidney problems?
Do you know exactly what the kidney problem is?
The function of my kidneys.
This morning before I went on the air, I was reading about women that had bladder infections, and I realized that's not exactly a kidney issue, but it's closely mm-hmm. related.
No, it's not bladder.
But what they said was, they said that when they experimented with women that had clinical low-grade infections of their bladders, but they didn't have horrible symptoms yet, they would actually give them baking soda. And baking soda is known as sodium bicarbonate. You could probably go to the store and buy a huge bag of it for maybe $7. That could be a lifetime supply almost. But my point is, when you start taking a little bit of baking soda and just putting it into a small glass of water, stir it vigorously for 10 seconds, it will go from kind of a white milky color to clear in no time at all. But what happens is, it has what's called an alkalizing effect upon the blood. And I don't know if you know this or not, but your blood is supposed to be slightly alkaline, meaning it has a pH of 7.35 to 7.45. And you can live if you can keep your blood slightly alkaline, but you will die if your blood becomes very, very acidic. So the other thing that I'm referring to is, specifically is related to your question, people that have what's called kidney failure. So let's just say you went to the doctor and the doctor said, I'm going to do several tests to measure how your kidneys are doing. And the first test they do is called creatinine. And the doctor says, ma'am, your creatinine levels are high. That indicates that there's significant stress on your kidneys, or the kidneys are failing to work like God designed them to. And so that's high. And they do one that's called BUN. That's just an acronym for blood urea nitrogen. That's a very accurate marker. And your BUN is at 30, so that's elevated. Then they do a test that measures your kidney function. Usually they have the small letter E, which stands for the word estimated, and then capital letters GFR, and GFR stands for glomerular filtration rate. And that number is below 60. That means you're in some degree of kidney failure. And so you're thinking, well, what kind of a plan is my doctor going to give me? Well, I don't know if your doctor has given you a plan, but I want to give you a plan. If you start consuming a half of a teaspoon of Arm & Hammer baking soda, it doesn't have to be Arm & Hammer, it can be any baking soda, as long as there's nothing added to it. If you start doing that every day, you're going to help take some of the burden off your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
The kidneys do not like a highly acidic environment. And so to me, the most acidic foods that I could give you right now would probably be carbonated beverages or soda pops or soft drinks, things like that. They're so acidic. Sugar, refined sugar and sweets, it is about the most acidic stuff of all time. So the kidneys can't ever rise to the occasion to heal as long as we're putting high acid foods. And so what I'm wanting to recommend is, if I give you a little bit of alkalizing baking soda, all of a sudden we're going to start soothing and calming down the kidneys, which I know that you've already figured this out. The whole reason that I read the deal about chlorophyll a while ago is I was trying to trick somebody else into eating green vegetables for the sake of their kidneys.
Mm.
I almost tricked you, didn't I? Do you know what the most... There is a drug... You can buy it over the counter, or it can be combined with codeine. It begins with the letter T. T is in Tom. And this drug is so common, but it's probably the most destructive drug to the kidneys of all time.
Wow.
So your liver does a great job of detoxifying anything that would be potentially harmful or poisonous to your body. But the last time I checked, your kidneys, they play the most valuable role in helping to excrete waste from the bloodstream and scrub the blood clean. But if you're taking Tylenol, it's never going to happen. I think I could probably cause an individual to develop 13,000 cysts in their kidneys just with Tylenol alone.
Oh.
So do not consume Tylenol.
Right.
Do you like to eat fruits and vegetables?
I like them, but I don't eat them as I should, and I know this.
Well, but you're going to start as of today, aren't you?
Yes.
And so when you go to the store, you're going to look for dark frozen cherries.
Ah.
Now, the way the store in Jacksonville is lined out, they have 13 cases devoted to ice cream sandwiches and frozen Snicker bars and Bluebell ice cream. They have exotic flavors like Pine Bark Crunch. I just made that up. That's not really...
I was wondering.
Yes, that's my brand of ice cream. It's called Stinging Nettle Bark Bites.
Okay.
No, that won't work, will it?
No.
Hey, do you think that if I created an ice cream named Roadkill, that would go...
No.
No, I'm just joking. But they have all these freezer cases devoted to sugary treats, but they only have like one small door that if you open up, you can find blackberries and raspberries and cherries and blueberries. But I think that's brilliant if you start consuming those. If you can meet your body's requirements for sweets by eating, you know, frozen strawberries and blackberries and blueberries, but cherries, I think that cherries are one of the most interesting fruits. Sometimes these little guys, they grow like crazy in countries like Turkey. And the people there, they pick them probably very lovingly, and they try to, you know, cut them open and take that stone pit out of them. I do not want you to bite down into a cherry and have a stone in the middle of it. You could crack a tooth.
Right.
I kind of think in my own mind that's what David used to slay Goliath, but the Bible says it was a stone from a brook. It didn't say it was a stone from a cherry, did it?
No.
Okay, I stand corrected. But if you start eating cherries and blueberries and blackberries, these contain what I'm going to call life-sourced energy that comes from the sun and from the planet. You got to have something living if you're going to heal the kidneys. And what I'm saying is you can't heal the kidneys by giving them Doritos.
Right.
But the world that we live in, that's what people are raised on. Mm. Doritos. It's just nuts. If you were willing to take one bunch of celery, I don't know how many ribs of celery are in a bunch, but I'm going to guess there's like 7 or 8 or 9. But if you would run that through the juicer and drink that celery juice, your liver would say, thank you very, very much. I think I can start to rejuvenate.
Uh-huh.
And when your liver works better, your kidneys are going to work better.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the old-time doctors, they used to call your skin your third kidney. And which technically, there's not a huge difference between sweat and urine. Now, urine is more concentrated. But I think if you viewed yourself as a solar-charged battery that needs sunlight and minerals and water, you're going to start eating vegetables that are full of water, and that'd be celery.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized I have blown past my allotted time, so would you call me next week and I'll tell you everything else for the kidneys?
Yes.
God bless you.
I bless you, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBJS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.